Hi there, everyone. I'm Jared.
And I'm Zanita.
We are your hosts of Record Live, a podcast where we talk about church, faith, and living well.
We believe as followers of Jesus, faith is more than just a set of beliefs. It's a way of life, something we put into practice.
Let's go live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Record Live. Today, we have a cool young guy with us on the show who has recently moved to Africa to do some mission work in Zambia, and he's currently visiting his hometown in Australia, so we thought we would grab him while connection is hot and while we're on the same time zone. So welcome to the show, Joel.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's so good to be here, and I can honestly say that I haven't been called young for a while, let alone cool. So that's much appreciated.
I don't think you're too much older. I think we're in high school or around the same time. So I'm just trying to keep myself in check too, I guess. But
love it. Yeah, I think it's legacy from the youth department for sure. Just being around teenagers too much. Yeah, I've felt very old for a very long time.
Joel, you're only in Australia for a few weeks. What is your favorite thing to do when you're back home?
I love surfing. Yeah, I'm just enjoying surfing every day. And it's been pretty big, actually. And I haven't been paddling for like 6 months. And so it's been testing me out for sure. A few muscles that haven't been used for a while, but I'm enjoying it. Yeah, just getting out every day. And regardless of the conditions, just trying to find something, get wet, refresh. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I hear Kelly Slater flew over recently for the surf because it was so good. He's been spotted.
He flies in, I go out. So, yeah, generally speaking.
Recently, Joel, you founded a project called Penny Projects, and we'd love to hear about that a bit later in the show. But before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And I guess what was the journey leading up to Penny Projects? How did you find yourself there and so on?
Yeah, sure. No, I'm more than happy to share that. So I've been in pastoral ministry for the last 9 years. And while I was going through, I studied at Avondale. And while I was going through Avondale, one of the things that kept me sane in semester breaks was getting overseas and doing short-term international mission trips. And so I was in the Philippines on 3 times in a year. We were taking teams over there and preaching evangelistic campaigns, doing building projects and that sort of thing. One mission was really formative in those years for me and my involvement in that. And so, yeah, it's always been a part of my journey, international missions and that sort of thing. And yeah, so I've been a pastor now for 9 years. And in coming into the youth department in the last 4 years, I was really excited to be able to facilitate some trips. It's a good position to be able to do that. And then, yeah, first year in, was just finding my feet, and second year was COVID, so didn't get to do any international trips during my time, but we were able to do different service projects while we were there. So a team went over to Kangaroo Island helping out after the bushfires there, and there were a number of other local storm cos and other trips that we were able to facilitate and encourage from that department. So it wasn't all lost, but certainly missed out on that opportunity to facilitate international missions. And then more recently, I've had the opportunity to do that. So that's been really exciting.
And Joel, I understand the last place you were working was in South Australia, my home state. So shout out to any South Australians watching. What leads a guy like yourself from, obviously apart from your passion for overseas ministry, but how did you break from sort of pastoral ministry to moving to Africa, starting a new project? Like, it seems like a rather large transition from a stable job where you get to still pursue your passion, you get to do a mission trip here and there and work with young people, to really changing everything about your life. It's quite a huge thing. Can you tell us a little bit about that transition?
Yeah, for sure. If this was a counseling session, I'd be happy to share more with you, but it's live, and so I probably won't. But I'm only joking. Yeah, look, it came about as a result of, as I said, I was in pastoral ministry for 9 years. The last 4 of those were in the youth department. And Yeah, as a result of those 9 years as a professional minister, you're constantly trying to be professional, or you're constantly interested. Your focus is on how to be better at your craft. And one of the things that, yeah, I've really poured my heart into pastoral ministry and administration in the last 4 years. But one of the things that I was noticing was I got into ministry because I'm passionate about it. I got into ministry because I feel called to be in ministry. And I didn't want that to just be associated to a paycheck. And so I felt really tempted to see myself as a professional detached from the reality of calling. And I don't think that those two things are mutually exclusive by any means. But I know that in my own heart, in my own mind, I was drifting into a place of seeing myself as a professional at the expense of passion and personal vigor for the work. And so, yeah, when I noticed that, I intentionally, and this happened through a process, right? It wasn't just like a lightning bolt moment by any means. I sensed God calling me to step out of the position that I was in South Australia. And I had to do that without anything else on the cards. And so I was stepping out of something without going into something else. And that forced me into a season of rest, which I think was really healthy. And then that led me to where I am now. So it was really that sense in my own heart of, and what it's become for me has been that challenge of, I want to stay passionate. I want to stay relevant to where the needs of the people are. And I don't want my paycheck to be something that is detaching me from reality. And becoming, it can provide a sense of comfort that is easy to fall into some bad habits, and just the mindset in which you approach ministry can be a challenge as well. And so, yeah, for me, I noticed that, and so took that step.
We had a conversation on here recently about people feeling called to ministry and being called to be pastors. So it's interesting that you say, I felt called to kind of step out of that. But I guess, do you feel like you're still pastoring in a sense, in what you're doing currently?
Yeah, for sure. It was an interesting journey, just wrestling with the idea of calling in my own mind. And so for 9 years, I've been accustomed to introducing myself as Joel. And a natural question that people ask is, what do you do? And I say that I'm a pastor. Now, some people think that I'm a plasterer, and then they shake my hand and realize that I'm definitely a pastor, not a tradie by any means. But yeah, it's just so interesting to be in a position where I had to rethink about how I'm going to introduce myself, right? I'm not currently pastoring a church. I'm not currently employed by the church. And so how do I introduce myself? That's been one of the challenges. And so, yeah, look, in Africa, I'm based in Zambia, currently at Riverside Farm Institute. And that has, people relate to me as a pastor there. I'm in ministry. I'm working in chaplaincy at a local school there. When I say working, it's a volunteer position. But certainly people are relating to me as a minister. But yeah, for a good 12 months there, they weren't. And so that was an interesting situation to be in.
Joel, correct me if I'm wrong. I think I've seen some of your posts on social media and that sort of thing. But you went to Africa perhaps to visit, sort of thing. It wasn't necessarily a permanent thing. You weren't going to live there as such. It was a trip, maybe a holiday or even a service trip type idea, but it's changed. Can you walk us through that process? What happened? You decided to go to Africa. What happened after that?
Yeah, for sure. So the original trip to Africa was for 2 months. And one of the things that I was very intentional about was, okay, I'm stepping out of pastoral ministry for a season, and I want to be doing things that are going to be equipping me to be a better pastor in the future. And so one of the opportunities that afforded me was the time and the space to be able to choose who is around me. Because in professional ministry, I haven't always been able to choose those that are mentoring me directly and the people that I'm associating with on a daily basis. And I've been blessed to be around some incredible people in pastoral ministry. But in stepping out of that, I was thinking, okay, this is my chance to surround. I believe that people have a massive influence on us, and those that we associate with have a big influence on us. And so I wanted to select those individuals and choose individuals that I wanted to shape me in some way. And so that led me to Africa. Kim Busell has been coming out to Australia to teach at Arise for a number of years. And his story and journey has been really inspirational for me. And I just chose to go and spend a couple of months with him. And that put me in touch with the director at Riverside Farm there in Zambia. And yeah, the rest is history. That they offered me a position. And yeah, it was very much in line with what I was trying to achieve during this season of my life in stepping into a ministry position, but not having that paycheck attached. And yeah, one of the conference presidents in Australia was more than happy to give me that same opportunity to volunteer for them. But yeah, I took the opportunity to step into Zambia, into the role that I'm in now.
Yeah, so cool. So you went to Africa and you stepped into, is it Riverside Farm? That's a school, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Riverside Farm, it's the second largest producers of bananas in Zambia. Uh-huh. And so they use their production of bananas, wheat, soy, and other primary produce to be able to then fund mission projects. Yeah. And so they've got a full-time dental clinic. They've got another clinic, a medical clinic on their campus. They've also got an elementary school, a high school. They've got a soap factory, a Kuna soap. And then they've also got a wellness retreat there as well that people come in and they deal with diabetes and other lifestyle diseases and things like that. And so depression, anxiety and that. And so, yeah, it's quite composite. So Riverside Farm Institute, there's kind of two wings. There's the production side of things and then what they're giving back to the community as well.
Sure. And so when you went there, what were you initially doing? Like how did Penny Projects eventually come from that?
Yeah, good question. So I was spending time with Kim Busel and he stepped back from operations at Riverside. He's spending more time across East Africa, launching projects, supporting projects. And yeah, they're under an umbrella organization called OCI, Outpost Centers International. So they encourage lay ministry all over the world. And so one of the things that he does in his spare time when he's not working for OCI is doing local impact projects in our community there. And he's since started in other countries around Africa and the world as well. But yeah, that really inspired me just seeing the work that they're doing. I met a guy named Bornface. He's blind. He became blind 20 something years ago. He's been at Riverside for 30 something years. And so when he became blind, his marriage fell apart, his wife left him, and that left him with a bunch of kids and a lot of responsibility. He was trying to put food on the table and that sort of thing. But one of the other things that it did was provide an opportunity for him to think, okay, there's other people in my situation that don't have capacity to work. And so how do I be a blessing to them? And so he started identifying people with disabilities in their local community to be able to help. And we've got about 60 people in the network at the moment that he's helping on a monthly basis. And so when I was there, I met him, I saw the work that they were doing, and I was trying to think of how I could add value to the work that they're doing. And that's where Penny Projects came about. The idea behind Penny Projects is very simple. It's just that little things that we have or do can have a big impact on someone else. And that's where the idea was birthed. It doesn't take much to make a difference in someone's life. And so it's been a blessing to not only start that, but see it kind of grow into what it is today. And yeah, it's having a real impact in people's lives. And so I'm really excited about that.
Can you unpack a little bit more about Penny Projects, the name? So why Penny? Why not 5 cents? Or, you know, what's the currency in Zambia? It's cool alliteration, but...
It's just alliteration. But the idea is something small, a small increment, something that's seemingly insignificant to us. And yeah, I remember when I was thinking about the name and that sort of thing, I was speaking at a high school here in Australia, and I was thinking every one of these kids could give a dollar if they believed in the project, if they thought it was going to make a difference. Everyone here in Australia has access to a dollar. And so I was thinking about the impact that could be had on the neighboring community where I'm based. And even here in Australia, I believe that when we put our little together, it can actually make a big difference or have a big impact. And so that's the idea behind it. We're doing small scale projects, things that don't cost much. For example, there's some girls that live outside of our community in the neighboring village there. They come from single mother homes and that sort of thing, and they can't afford school uniforms to go to school. Schooling is free, but their uniforms, their backpacks, their shoes and that sort of thing the family provides. And I think it's costing us around $15 a child to be able to provide those things. And that has a massive impact in their life. And I was talking to some of the girls. We have some young girls in high school that did a tailoring course that have been making those uniforms for us. And they were telling us, like, yeah, when we were going to school and not having a uniform, it's so embarrassing. Like, all of the older kids pick on you. They know that you're poor. They know that you can't afford to be there. They understand the type of background that you come from, and they make fun of you for it. And so they were really excited to be a part of this project where they were able to make these uniforms for these young girls. They're in primary school. And it's just such a small thing for them. It took them a couple of days to make these uniforms, and it'll have an ongoing impact in their life. And so that's the idea. Like, $15 for me, it's a very small investment. I can't even get a meal in Australia right now for $15. It's gotten so expensive. And so it's just this idea that these little things that I do can have a big impact in someone else's life. And I still believe, I'm committed to the idea that it's not just relevant in Zambia. I'm committed to the idea that there are little things that I can do here in Australia with my neighbors, with those that I have influence over, that can have a massive impact in their lives.
Yeah, such a good point. I love that concept that these things that are seemingly insignificant to us can have a really big impact. You mentioned one story just with the uniforms, but what are some of, like, the big things that have come about as a result of small gifts or little things from other people?
Yeah, one of the really cool opportunities that we've had, and it's just been incredible to see how God has orchestrated this. So last year when I was there just on my 2 months, I didn't have any plans to stay long term. I met a girl in a restaurant. We were sitting at tables next to each other. I was with Kim and Joyce. We were on a trip and we're sitting there, and this lady sitting there next to us, and we got talking about what she does. She's from Germany. She's a prosthetic specialist. And so she's able to come over to Zambia every year and run a clinic with prosthetics. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. We ended up connecting on Instagram. I was really interested in what she was doing and the work, the impact that she was having there in Zambia. Anyway, fast forward 6 months, I'm in Zambia and I met this young boy with Down syndrome who has both of his legs were removed. I think it was around when he was 1 year of age. They weren't developing properly and he had to get, he's a double amputee. And so I just posted a short video. I wanted to get some food for the family and just see if I could support his sister, who's his full-time carer with schooling. And in doing so, she responded to the video and said, hey, I'm going to be in Zambia next year running a clinic. I'd love to see if we could get him some legs. And so it's like that conversation hasn't cost me anything. And yet it could result in not only him getting a set of legs, but also since then she said, hey, there's other people that, yeah, we could see if you had anyone in your community. And so been going around knocking on huts going, hey, does anyone know anyone with any amputees? It's a bit interesting, but yeah, door knocking, it's a bit of a different strategy to door knocking. But yeah, so that's been incredible, being able to meet some amazing people with some incredible stories. And so when I get back to Zambia, we'll be able to take them to the clinic, and yeah, they're gonna do an assessment and looks like they'll be able to get legs as well, which is super exciting.
Can you give our viewers a little bit of an insight into what the community around this institute is like? Like, what sort of conditions are you working in? What conditions are people living in? How would it differ from, say, Australia? What are some of the needs that you see are prevalent in those communities?
Yeah, it's one of the major challenges is in working with people with disabilities here in Australia through NDIS and these other schemes that are available. There's so much support. In stepping into Africa, in Zambia in particular, it was one of the things that was so confronting was these individuals, there's no social welfare system. You're dealing with families that are sleeping on a dirt floor. They're lucky to have a bamboo or a straw mat to be able to put their family on at night. One of the ladies that we helped didn't even have a front door. So you've got wild animals, snakes and that sort of thing just coming in. And so It's very confronting being in a society where these people have absolutely nothing. And so it's up to the generosity of the individual family to support these family members with disabilities. which is a massive burden. Like you can imagine mother that's walking up to 3 kilometers one way to get water for her family. She might have to do that 3 and 4 times a day to be able to get enough water for the family to bathe, to cook, to wash, and that sort of thing. And then you multiply the energy required to be able to support a family member that isn't contributing in any way. It's like having a child for life. Now, normally by the age of 10, these children are contributing in a very meaningful way to the family. They're helping out in the field. They're helping to grow food. They're helping with the washing and a lot of those domestic duties. By the age of 10, they're very self-sufficient and contributing to the family. These members of the family with disabilities, I haven't met anyone that's past the age of probably 40. But yeah, if you've made it to 30, it's only because your family has been gracious and they've been willing to sustain you. And even then, it can be a source of pain and bitterness for the family and just having to continually care for your needs when their own children are going hungry or their own bellies are empty at different times.
I guess that those needs, those physical needs, they're not like a stranger to us. Like we're kind of aware that in Africa people have less than us and they're a lot poorer. But something that I'm often interested in is like we also hear that places like Uganda and Zambia are the happiest places in the world. And so I guess in your time being there, like how have you seen people are going mentally and emotionally? Are they really struggling? Obviously in Australia and other Western countries, we're rife with depression and anxiety, but like, it doesn't really make sense because they're suffering in such bigger ways. So how have you seen things there in terms of their mental states and their emotional states?
It's incredible, to be honest. Like people are so communally minded. It's amazing. So for example, I'm with Kim and we're at a school and one of the things, like I'll take some photos from time to time and they love to see themselves in the photo, right? And so you take a photo, they're looking at it, they're all giggling and laughing. And one of the things that Kim loves to do is to ask them, oh, who is this? Who is this? And they can always tell you who all the others are. But one of the things that he noticed was they'd always go quiet when you ask them who they are. They actually don't have a concept of what they look like. And so it's just this illustration of the fact that they are so communally minded, they don't even have an image of themselves. Like you can imagine as a teenager how much time you spend looking in the mirror. Like it would take me a week to recover from a haircut, if I'm honest. Like just thinking about, oh man, my hair doesn't look how I want it to look and I don't feel comfortable being in public. That's a pretty, I'm exaggerating there, but it is true to some degree, right? And so to think of my upbringing, I'm so focused on myself. And then to look at these kids that are so focused on others that they don't even have a concept of what they look like. Like imagine just removing the amount of time in your day thinking about how you're presenting yourself, how people are perceiving you and that sort of thing. It's just, it's freeing. And these guys are thriving as a result. Like you can genuinely see them enjoying life. Now, yeah, you turn up into a village and they're playing, they've got a game that they play in the dirt. They draw squares on the dirt. We have a board game. They just have games that they play in the dirt and that sort of thing. And yeah, the men are sitting around talking and the children are playing and it's incredible to see just the family unit together. They've got 3 generations typically living in the same house and they all get along. They all work together. They all support each other. And it's a beautiful thing to observe. Yeah.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think one of the biggest things that I've realized about myself is just how selfish I am. And I've become really aware of that just coming back to Australia in the last couple of weeks. I've been living on my own for some time now and I've just become very self-sufficient. And especially living in Africa, like money can literally solve a lot of problems for you there. And so, yeah, it's just so challenging coming back here and I'm staying with my parents at the moment. And so just having other people around all the time and being in someone else's space, it's constantly revealing. It's giving me this feedback of how selfish I am. And it's one of the things that I've noticed. I remember, just times where I've driven away from these villages and I've just wept just because of just, it's so easy to complain about my circumstances. Like, I'm living in a pretty average apartment, if I'm honest, in Zambia. I'm living in, like, it's, I've got these bright green curtains that I wake up to every morning, and it's like, there's nothing aesthetically pleasing about it. And I'm a bachelor, so I literally don't care. But it's just like, my shower sucks, and there's just things about my kitchen that I would change. And yeah, it's just, but then you're going out and you're seeing these people in the dirt and you're like, I have nothing to complain about. And then coming back here to Australia, and it's so natural for me to just become selfish again and become used to just all of those comforts of life. And I genuinely believe that I was born for this life. Like, I wasn't born for that life over there, right? Like, I wouldn't last 2 seconds in a hut. I wouldn't last 2 seconds sitting on the ground with absolutely no options of getting off the ground. It's just, I'm not built for that. My psyche isn't built for that. And it's amazing how quick I rebound back into this lifestyle here. And it's just something that is so evident in my mind that I can so quickly forget about the need that exists around me when I have my own creature comforts met. And it scares me, if I'm honest. Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone's looking for life lessons, go to Africa with Joel.
But, yeah, just for a minute. It's all you need is a minute. It's like, yeah. But the honest truth is, Anita, like, there's just so much need around us here. And I think the thing that's is beautiful for me in Australia is it's evident and people know their need and they're willing to talk about it and they'll even bring that need before you. Here in Australia, we're so private. We try and keep things so close to our chest, and it causes so many issues for us in society when we become recluse and we withdraw and we become bitter and resentful towards other people. We don't deal with it. We don't have to deal with it. We just withdraw. And so I think they're the real issues that are plaguing our society here. I think there are financial burdens. I think there are a number of challenges that we're facing for so many different factors. And we go through life alone. We try and figure it out on our own. And the government steps in where they need to. It's very impersonal. And I'm absolutely convinced that the same need exists here. It presents itself very differently, but the same need exists. We all need community. We all need love. We all need acceptance. We all need belonging. And I believe that we as a church are uniquely positioned to be able to provide for those core needs. It's just a question of whether or not we're in tune with what is happening in society.
I was going to ask another question, but maybe I'll ask this instead because I feel like you're talking about it anyway. But I guess on that idea of there's just as many needs in Australia, and on the idea of penny projects where small things can make a big difference, I guess practically, what can people do here? Like, if you were to move back to Australia, what would you practically do different in our community? Like, what needs are you kind of being made more aware of around us in Australia that you've noticed since going to Africa?
Yeah, really good question. I just think, first of all, I have responsibility over the impact that I have on other people. And so just my being, just my presence has an impact on someone. And the question is, do I always have a positive impact on people when I'm interacting with them? I'm not talking about whether I'm giving away $5 every conversation I have. It's not a monetary thing that I'm talking about. It's just, what is my being, what is my presence doing to those around me? What impact am I having on those around me? And this is a need that we have, is to be self-aware of the impact that we're having. And yeah, I just think that one of the things that I've become very aware of is just my need to, and my desire to, always have a positive influence, always be a lifting presence, and wanting to, even if I just have a few words with someone, is it going to lift their day and have a positive impact, or is it going to add to their stress and their burden? And yeah, that's definitely one of the first things that I think about, is just my personal influence. The other thing that I would say is that there's a number of conversations that I've had where people, and I've been a pastor, and so it's a little bit unfair to say that this applies to everyone, but I still believe that people want to open up, they want to share their burdens, but most of the time we're quick to talk about ourselves and our own struggles and our own challenges. And when someone shares with you, ask them how they're going, and maybe they break the mold and say that they're not doing too well. it takes courage to take a step forward and say, hey, would you like to talk about that one time? It might not be appropriate now, but yeah, let's catch up next week for a meal and just sit down and talk through that if you want to. I think for so many of us, we want to be self-sufficient. We want to remain private. We don't want to bear ourselves as an inconvenience to someone else. We need safe spaces to be able to open up. And I think for so many of us, we just don't have that safety. We don't find that safety in a lot of the people that we're associating with. And so I think the next thing is just, yeah, creating safe spaces for people to be open and honest and share their burdens and know that someone is there to do life with them. And yeah, that's probably the next thing that I'd be looking to tackle for sure.
Yeah. Some awesome practical advice there, Joel. Certainly look at stewarding your own personal impact on others and creating safe spaces, I think, is something that our societies really need. Joel, respect, brother. It's been great to talk to you today. I'm glad that I will have the opportunity to edit the podcast version because I'll get to re-listen to this. There's some things I need to chew over some more. You shared some really great wisdom and insight, and we just wish you all the best and God bless on your future endeavors. And with Penny Projects and the work that you and others are doing in Zambia, it sounds like it's really necessary and really needed. So God bless, safe travels when you do go back, and thanks so much for spending time with us on Record Live.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
For anyone else, Joel, who is listening and wants to support Penny Projects or wants to learn more about what you're doing, where do they go?
Pennyprojects.org is one place. The website isn't as up to date. It's more of a vehicle to allow people to donate through. We're more active on Instagram, a little bit on Facebook as well. But yeah, Instagram, just Penny Projects RS. You can also see what Riverside Farm Institute's up to on their Instagram and Facebook page as well. A lot of awesome stuff happening there. Broader picture in terms of development on a large scale in Africa. There are a few places that people can go, but Instagram's definitely the most up-to-date, Penny Projects RS.
Nice. Awesome. Thanks again, Joel. Enjoy the rest of your time in Australia. I hope you get heaps more surfs in.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
This is an Adventist Media podcast.